Morning. Today's Daf and Erechin is Yudal. We're starting today the third parak of the Masechta. The second parak of the Masechta really took us off on a detour because the beginning of the parak opened up with the point that when it comes to Erechin, so there's a range in terms of how much a person is going to pay, and the range could be anywhere between one shekel and 50 shekels. That in mind, so then the second parak went on to other areas in Halacha where there are ranges. Most of the ranges were minimum, maximum. Some of the ranges were minimum, no maximum. But it really took us on a tour of other areas in Shas. We start now the third parak of the Masechta. We're on the Mishnah on the bottom of Yigimah Mudbeis. Yesh Berachin Lahach Lahachmer. Erchin can sometimes represent a leniency and it can sometimes represent a stringency. The Gemara is going to explain. The Mishnah is going to explain. Same thing is true with the Steachuza. When you have an ancestral field and you are Makdish and you sanctify the ancestral field, so redeeming it sometimes is going to represent a leniency and a stringency. And again, assurance is coming up that the Mishnah will explain this as well. If your Shur HaMuad is, Rachmanis is to have killed an Eved Kenani, so, and the payment that you have to give to its owner, Lahaka Lahachmer, can represent a Kula and can sometimes represent a Chumra. Onus of Mefata Motzi Shemra, in cases of Ona Mefata and Motzi Shemra, that is rape, seduction, and defamation of character, Lahaka Lahachmer, so there too, sometimes represents a kula and a chumra. If you haven't figured out at this point in time, there's a basic theme in this Mishnah, and that is the idea is as follows. In everything that was just listed in this Mishnah, so the payment is a fixed payment. It is not going to be based on actual market value, but it's a fixed payment. Sometimes we could call it a knas, but not all these cases in the Mishnah is a knas. Onis mefata, so that's a knas. Motzi shemra is a knas. But that's not true with all the cases in the Mishnah. The erchin is not a knas. Erchin is a donation that you want to make. But so all the cases in the Mishnah are not knas, but all the cases in the Mishnah are fixed payment. And it's going to be an amount issued by the Torah, and that's it. And so sometimes it could be above market value, and sometimes it could be below market value. That's exactly the point of the Mishnah. Because it is fixed, so therefore it is totally irrespective of actual market value. And so sometimes that could be to you towards a leniency or sometimes towards a stringency. And what we're going to do in the course of these Mishnayos coming up is we're going to explain every one of these cases that are mentioned here in the heading of the Mishnah. Heading of the Mishnah has now come to an end. And now so the Mishnah itself is going to amplify each of the points of the Mishnah. So we're going to start with Erchin. How could it be a Kula? How could it be a Chumra? So let's say someone wanted to give the Erich value of somebody who was particularly handsome. Right? He's not. He's pleasant to look at. He's fit. In other words, great physical condition. So or going the other direction, someone gives the Erich pledge of somebody who is unpleasant to look at. In all these cases, no sin chamishim selah. So you're going to be giving 50 selaim. Now the Gemara's assumption over here is that if he's somebody who is na'am, so he could be valued at a number significantly higher than 50 selaim in terms of what his market value is. So for you having to pay 50 selaim, that will be now a kula. On the other hand, if you are giving the erech of somebody who's ka'or, somebody's unpleasant to look at, someone unattractive, so then you giving 50 shekel will be a chumra because his market value could be significantly less. Now the Mishnah ends off with the point that if you make the claim, not claim, but if you make the obligation, the donation to give its shavyav, I said its, didn't I? His shavyav or her shavyav, so no sin is shavyav. So then, I'm sorry, his damim, so then no sin is shavyav, then you give its market value. So obviously these kulans and chumers only kick in when you use the instrument of erchin. But if you're using the instrument of damim, so then you only give its, then you give his value. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Mishnah. All the other cases in the Mishnah are going to be explained over the course of the upcoming Mishnayos. So right now I'm not going to detail what is Steachuza, what's Shur HaMuad, most of you know, but it's coming up later in the Mishnayos. So as we get to the Mishnayos, each one of them, so I'll explain each one of them in more detail. Yesh Berachin Lahakil Lahachmer. So Ketzad Echa Sheherich V'chulei. So the Gemara starts off by just first quoting our Mishnah and Bisol in Ba'ovei Kochavim Lo. Interesting. The Gemara makes the following observation of our Mishnah. In the example in the Mishnah of Erchin, so the Mishnah says Es Hana'a Shebi Yisrael Ves HaKa'or Shebi Yisrael. So we're looking now at the Erich valuation of either somebody who is attractive amongst the Jewish people or unattractive amongst the Jewish people. Now, why are we saying Shebi Yisrael? In other words, why don't we just simply say someone who is attractive or someone who is unattractive. And so a careful reading of the Mishnah would indicate that Erchin is only by a Jew and not by non-Jew. Now, remember Erchin and non-Jews? We discussed this back in the first parak. And back in the first parak, we had the following debate. We know that by Erchin, non-Jews are somewhat included, somewhat excluded. And if you remember, there was a machlokas amongst the Tanayim. Well, which part are they included and which part are they excluded? And the positions that we learned back in the Mishnah, in the first parak, is basically mirror images of one another. One position is that non-Jews are able to be ma'arich. They can make the obligation, the financial obligation, but eino ne'arach. But they can't be the subject of an erchin evaluation. And the other position is just the opposite, is that they can't be ma'arich. They can't make the obligation, but ne'arach. But they're included in being the subject. And so when our Mishnah over here says that echad should be Yisrael, echad na should be Yisrael, echad kor should be Yisrael, we're obviously talking about the subject. And by virtue of the fact that our Mishnah says Yisrael, it sounds like our Mishnah is taking a very clear position that only a Jew is subject to the Erechin evaluation, but not a non-Jew. And so that's the Gemara's comment. So it sounds like our Mishnah is not going like Rav Meir. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah, the Mishnah that we learned back on Daf Hey, Hamad Beis. So Rav Meir says that Ovi Kochavim is Ne'erach. He could be the subject of an Erech evaluation, but not Marech. And our Mishnah seems not to be going like Rav Meir. So on this, we could comment a couple things. One, our Mishnah could be not going like Rav Meir, meaning it's okay. On the other hand, we know that generally speaking, when you have a Stam Mishnah, when you have an anonymous Mishnah, so Stam Mishnah could Rav Meir. So it's a little bit uncomfortable for our Mishnah not to be going like Rav Meir. But in any event, the Gemara is going to suggest maybe not. Maybe our Mishnah could in fact be aligned with Rav Meir. It could very well be that our Mishnah is not saying Yisrael to the exclusion of a non-Jew. Our Mishnah is actually making an ancillary point. So, what our Mishnah wants to do is make an ancillary point, as we are now on the top of Yidal Amad Aleph. So, based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, a statement made by Rav Yehuda Merav, and that is that a person is forbidden from saying how beautiful is this non-Jew. The pasuk says lo sichanim. The pasuk lo sichanim in the seventh parak of Devarim is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us, teaches us three things. Lo sichanim tells us number one. Now, truth of the matter is, if you look contextually in the pasukim themselves, you will see that the pasuk seems to be talking about the seven Canaanite nations. Further review, the Gemara says it's not limited to the seven Canaanite nations. Okay. Anyway, that's an important discussion. I'm not trying to minimize it, but the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that there are three Isurim learned out from the Pasuk in the Torah where the Torah says Lo Sechanim. One, just going over the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, one is that you're not allowed to allow them to have Chaniya Bekarka, meaning they cannot sell them land in Eretz Yisrael. Once we gain possession of Eretz Yisrael, so we are forbidden from selling it to a non-Jew. Two, Lo Titein Lahem Chain. So we're not allowed to compliment them gratuitously for no reason. And three, minus chinam, you're not allowed to give them a gift with nothing expected in return. Okay? So this is the basic Gemara in Avodah Zarah. We are only focusing on one of these three points, and that is the second point that I mentioned, lo titen lam chein, that you're not allowed to compliment them gratuitously. And so the Gemara over here says that since our Mishnah, one of the examples of the Mishnah, is someone who is attractive, someone who is very handsome, so that's why the Mishnah chose Yisrael, not non-Jew. Nothing to do with whether non-Jews are or are not included in Erechin. We could say that they can be Nerach, but the Mishnah wanted to make this ancillary point. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, I hear you. Well, you know the Mishnah could do everything. The Mishnah can, on one hand, not deter us from thinking that non-Jews are excluded from Erechin, and the Mishnah could also teach us this ancillary point. And the Gemara asks now this question. V'lisnei et anashim yisov et ha-ka'or shebekananim. Why doesn't the Mishnah say that if I make an erech of someone who is handsome amongst the Jews or someone who is unattractive amongst Canaanim? Now the Mishnah could have said that and we would have gotten everything. We would have known that non-Jews are included in being nerach, and we also would have learned out the halacha of Rav Yehuda Merav. Why didn't the Mishnah do that and basically bring in both points? So the Gemara says, "Bechanu makamari betray umalomairi." So the Gemara says, "Well, you know, the Mishnah wants to stay on one particular grouping, And so once the Mishnah deals with Yisrael, so the Mishnah wants to stay with Yisrael and not move to another grouping. Yisrael contrasting to non-Jew. It may be that the Gemara's point over here is that it may be just too confusing, or just simply be that that's just simply the structure of the Mishnah, that the Mishnah likes to stay in one category. So So the Gemara says, well, in an upcoming Mishnah, we haven't seen this yet, it's actually going to contrast a someone who is a great one amongst the Kohanim or someone who's a minor amongst the Yisrael. We'll get to that Mishnah later on. But anyway, we seem to be flipping between Kahuna and Yisrael. So the Gemara says, that's not two nationalities. Hasam charumahu elam makdishu de kedusha Kohanim tfei. No, that's not two nationalities. That's within one nation. It just happens to be that the Kohen has more Kedusha. Or the Gemara makes another suggestion. In other words, upcoming, in fact, in the very next Mishnah, which we're about to begin, so it talks about Steachuza, ancestral fields, and specific halachas that relate to ancestral fields. Well, these specific halachas that relate to ancestral fields are only when we have a Jew owning these ancestral fields. Meaning it's not to say that a non-Jew can't have an ancestral field. Certainly a non-Jew is going to be inheriting the estate from his father. But in other words, but the point being is that when it comes to certain halachas regarding being makdish and being poda, all I'm going to explain in just moments from now, so those halachas are only specific to Jew, not to non-Jew. So once you have that upcoming Mishnah, so that's why the previous Mishnah, meaning our first Mishnah, dealt specifically with Yisrael, not to the exclusion of non-Jew, but just simply because we wanted to stay within thematically the same position of this next Mishnah is dealing with Jew, the previous Mishnah is dealing with Jew, but not because we want to exclude a non-Jew from Erchin. Okay? Otherwise stated, our Mishnah, despite the fact that our Mishnah uses the word Yisrael when describing Erchin, and that specifically the subject of Erchin being Nerach, it doesn't mean that our Mishnah is against the position of Rav Meir. We could suggest that our Mishnah is going like Rav Meir. Either one, our Mishnah is also looking to make an ancillary point of gratuitous compliments of a non-Jew, or the Mishnah could just simply be working within the same theme as the other Mishnah coming up in our Perek. Okay. Steachuza. We are up to the Mishnah now, Yudal Amad Aleph, and we are our topic of discussion now will be focusing around Steachuza, and so with just a little bit of an introduction. In Eretz Yisrael, so we're going to basically take fields and divide them into two categories. Steachuza, Stei Mikna. Steachuza is an ancestral field. Stei Mikna is a purchased field. So what's the difference? So it's actually very simple. If I inherited the field from my father, so that's called an ancestral field. If I purchased the field, so that's called a purchase field. I know that was simple. I know. That's probably going to be one of the easier points that we're going to be going over this morning. So good. That one's easy. Understood that in Eretz Yisrael, so using a Shemitah and Yovel cycle, so there never really is a purchasing of a field. I don't buy property. I really lease property in Eretz Yisrael. Because what's going to happen in the Yovel year is that it's going to return to its owner, to its original owner in the Yovel year. So to say that a land is a stay mikna, it's a purchased property, so it doesn't change the reality that I purchased it, but it's not purchased, meaning I'm not buying it indefinitely, I'm leasing it. But still, it's called a stay mikna. It's a field that I transacted, and it's not one that I inherited from my fathers. Now, we know the basic difference, meaning when it comes to stay achuza, so it's an ancestral field, so that means it's mine. And even if I go ahead and sell it to somebody else, I'm not selling it to him, I'm leasing it to him. He knows that, I understand that. And so therefore, in Yovel, it's going to come back to me. And so I'm leasing it to him based on the number of years that remain until Yovel. In other words, every land is going to have an annual rate of how much it can go for. Really, most of it's going to be depending on the yield it produces and the quality of the yield that it produces. So fine. So we're going to come out to a market value. We see how many years we are until Yovel. And I'll sell him the land until Yovel. I'll lease him the land until Yovel. That is, so when it comes to an ancestral field, so it's mine and it's going to come back to me. When it comes to a stay mikna, when it comes to a purchase field, so if I'm the purchaser of the field, I'm not really a purchaser of the field. It means I lease the property, and I'm leasing the property until Yovel. Okay, good. We're going to be discussing for the remainder of this morning the ideas as follows. If I'd like to, I can donate the field to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, I can be makdash the field. The field now is going to be property of the Beis HaMikdash, and obviously this is not going to be a carbon, obviously. We're talking about property. But we're talking about where now that the Beis HaMikdash has this property, so it can be subject to redemption, ge'ula, and that money that comes through redemption is going to be now part of the operating revenue stream that's going to go into the Beis HaMikdash. So good. So if I makdish a steachuza, so now that land belongs to the Beis Hamikdash, and they can redeem it and obviously generate the revenue. Also, I guess they could, and we're not going to really discuss this much. I mean, they could work the land, harvest the yield, sell the fruit. I guess they could do that. It does belong to them, so I guess that's an option. But really, we're going to be talking, we're going to focus mostly, exclusively on the idea of redemption. When it comes to a stay mikne, a land which I leased, I also can be makdish the field. Okay. Now, granted, by the way, what am I being makdish? It's not, the field's not mine. So when I'm being makdish, is my lease, meaning the only thing I have is a lease on the property, so I can be makdish the lease. Okay. But it's going to work out to be the same. Meaning when I'm makdish the lease, obviously I spent money in order to lease it for X amount of years. So now I'm basically donating it to the Beis Hamikdash. It's a donation. And then when the Beis Hamikdash wants to, they can turn around and they can have somebody redeem it. And once again, that'll generate revenue towards the Beis Hamikdash. Okay. What's going to be the big difference between Stei Mikne and Stei Achuza? So we're going to be focusing on right now. So there are a number of differences. I don't want to go over every one of them right now. I'd like to focus, however, on the one that the Mishnah is going to focus on. And that is going to be, what is the rate of redemption? The rate of redemption as it relates to a Stei Achuza versus a Stei Mikne. So Stei Achuza is easy because the Torah says so. Torah says that when I'm going to be redeeming a Stei Achuza, so there's going to be a rate of redemption, and it's going to be irrespective of its market value. Regardless of what its market value is, when it's a Stei Achuza that the owner was makdish, and now somebody wants to redeem it, so he's going to be redeeming it at a fixed rate. Now, what is the fixed rate? So it happens to be, I'll say it, doesn't mean anything to me, doesn't mean anything to you, because none of us are in the farming business, but it is going to be for a chomer sa'arim, for a land that's going to be producing one core of barley. In other words, when we talk about the area of a land, so they speak of the area of the land, not in terms of its actual area, although you could, but they talk about the area of the land based on, they talk about the area of the land based on how much yield it produces. So if we're talking about an area of land that produces a core of barley, core is a volume, it's 30 sa'a. A core of barley in the course of 1 year, so for that land, it's going to be redeemed at 50 shkalim. Now, 50 shkalim, now wait 1 second, that's per year? No. That is going to be based on the number of years that we have until Yovel. Well, the number of years we have until Yovel is an adjustable year, meaning how many are there? Could be 49, could be 40, could be 10. We're going to be assuming that when the Torah gives us a number, it's going to be maximum number of years. So that's going to be now, you're redeeming it at a rate of 50 shkalim per core. And that's going to be assuming that there are 49 years remaining. So the maximum number of years. That means that if I take that number and I prorate it, it's going to come out to a little bit over 1 shekel per year. Right? 50 shkalim divided by 49 years. So it's going to be a little bit over 1 shekel per year. There, you're going to hear the term shekel upundayon. It'll be 1 shekel and a pundayon if I take 49 of them. So I will come out with a 50 shkalim for the land. So that's it. When I makdish a stei achuza, when I consecrate a ancestral property, so it is now going to be able to be redeemed at this fixed rate of 1 shekel in pundayon for every core of that land that was consecrated. Good. When it comes to a stei mikna that was consecrated, so it's going to be redeemed basically simply on its market value. It doesn't matter, it does matter how much it produces, and it matters what the market is ready to fetch for it. And that is how you're going to be redeeming Stei Mikne, and it's not going to be based on the fixed rate. That's it. Right now, for our purposes right now, that's the basic difference that we need to know. There are other differences that exist between a Stei Mikne and Stei Achuza if we get to it a little bit later on. So we'll cover some of the other differences, but that's basically the difference that we need to know for now. Let us take a look at the Mishnah together. Stei Achuza la'aka la'achmir. So a Stei Achuza can sometimes serve as a kula and sometimes as a chumra. Kesar echad ha'makdish b'cholos ha'mechos. Let's say a person consecrated a land that was cholos ha'mechos. Rashi describes this in his first pshat, that we're talking about a land that's right outside the city. It's really inferior. People are walking through it all the time. They have to go into the city, out of the city. And so basically this is on the outskirts of the city. And it's not the best property, and it's walked through all the time. It's basically really inferior. Or Hamakdish Beparadesio Sabasti. or a person sanctified the orchards of Sebasti. The orchards of Sebasti are prime real estate that produce really quality yield. So in either event, no sin zerach hamasarim b'chamishim shekel kesef. So in terms of when you redeem it, you're redeeming it at its fixed rate, and that, again, serves as a kula and a chumra. It can be a kula to you when you're redeeming it, from the point of redemption. It can be a kula to you because it could be that this field was really expensive, but when I'm redeeming it, I redeem it at the fixed rate, and with the assumption the fixed rate is going to be significantly less than its market value. On the other hand, it could represent a chumra. If the property is of really poor quality, and a market value is significantly less than the fixed value, so when I redeem it at the fixed value, so I'm, that for me now is going to represent a chumra. Continuing in the Mishnah, of a stay mikna no sin eshavyav. Now, when it comes to a stay mikna, so how much do I redeem it at market value? Good. This is so far the Mishnah's basic point. And this goes back to the heading of the Mishnah that we started in the opening of this parak. That when it comes to stay achuza, much like by erchin, it's a fixed rate, and so therefore market values fluctuate. And so the fixed rate can sometimes be higher than market value, less than market value. That's exactly the point. It's a chumra, it's a kula. It could be a chumra, it could be a kula. Now Rabbi Elazar Omer, Echad Stei Mikna Ve'Echad Stei Achuza, Echad Stei Achuza. Now Rabbi Elazar happens to be of the opinion that it's all going to be redeemed at a fixed rate. Meaning, according to Rabbi Elazar, he does not believe that this is going to be a difference between a Stei Achuza and a Stei Mikna. And according to Rabbi Elazar, they're both going to be redeemed at the fixed rate. Ma Bein Stei Achuza, Stei Mikna. So that means, according to Rabbi Elazar, what then is the difference? Meaning, aside from describing the differences, is there any halachic nafkamina separating between the two? And so the Mishnah answers, yeah, shebistei achuza hu nosin chamish, uvistei mikna eino nosin chamish. That when it comes to a stei achuza, if the owner is going to be redeeming it, he's going to not only be redeeming it at the fixed rate, but he's going to be adding on top of that 25%. Chamish, even though chamish translates as a fifth, but it's 25%. Okay, if you've been here with me long enough, you'll know that that's correct. If you have not, you're just going to have to trust me for the time being. On another occasion, I'll explain how one-fifth becomes 25%. But, okay, it's 25%. Uv stei mikna, eino nosin chamish. However, when you're redeeming stei mikna, you do not need to add 25%, meaning it's going to be at the fixed rate, but you do not add the surcharge of 25% when redeeming it. This will be explained in more detail at the end of the Gemara Sugya. Okay, so far so good. So a machlokus in the Mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer, whether or not a stei mikna is going to be redeemed at a fixed rate or at market value. According to the Tanakhama, it's stei mikna, a leased field, is going to be redeemed at market value, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's going to be redeemed at a fixed rate, just like the stei achuza is. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, there is another difference between them, which is the surcharge of 25%. The owner is going to have to pay the surcharge. Someone else redeeming it will not pay the surcharge. I'm Rav Huna. We start with the Gemara's discussion, and that's the following. Hikdashad de Malaya Ilanos, Kishupo de Po de Ilanos, Beshavim Vechozer Po de Karka. Base Zerachomer Sa'orim Bechamishim Shekel Kesef. Allah said by Rav Huna is as follows. Let's say a person sanctified the following. It was a field, and it was filled with trees. Now, obviously, I think we all know that trees are connected to the ground. I think you knew that before coming into the daf today. I don't think I broke any. I don't think I broke any news over here.
New ground.
Right, new ground. Thank you. Much appreciated. So the but the story goes as follows. Even though obviously the trees are connected to the grounds, but they're not considered real estate. Meaning, as we'll be learning later this morning, what you could do is sell a tree, and the transaction can go strictly on the tree. Now, obviously, the tree needs the ground. The tree is not suspended in the air, doesn't exist in some sort of vacuum. Obviously, it needs the ground, but in terms of a tree, you can talk about a transaction of a tree without having to sell the property underneath it. And assuming that that's correct, it is. So now, when I am being makdish a tree, it'd almost be no different than me being makdish anything which is a movable item, which means that even though I inherited any movable item, if I'm makdish it, so how am I going to redeem it based on its market value? This idea of fixed value redemption is only specific to property and not to movables. And so Rav Huna now comes up with the following. It's a chiddush. And that is let's say I had a field and it was filled with trees. And I was makdish the entire field. So now when I come to redeem it, first the property at fixed value, and then the trees at market value. Meaning what we're going to assume that this person did is that he was makdish them separately. Trees separate from the property. Now, if the trees were mukdash, if they were consecrated in conjunction with the property, so then you have the redemption value being all fixed. But we're assuming that this person, when he was makdish did separately. Now, why would he do that? And the answer is very simple, and the Gemara is going to say it, but I'm going to say it right now. And that is that we are assuming that when a person is makdish, he's going to do so with the base of mikdash's best interest in mind. Not his own interest, the best, but rather the best interest of the base of mikdash. Or to use the language of the Gemara, we're going to see in just a moment, be'ayin yafe. Person is generous when he's makdish. And so therefore, if we have a scenario in which it wasn't totally clear what exactly, how much revenue is coming into the base of mikdash, it was a bit of a, it's a bit of an open-ended question. So we're going to now plug in an assumption that, according to Rav Huna, that is, that what he's doing is he's generating the greatest revenue for the base of mikdash. So when a person's makdish a field with trees, so here's what we're going to argue. That those were two separate transactions, two separate consecrations. So for the redemption of the land, it's at a fixed value. But for the redemption of the tree, it's going to be market value, which we assume is going to be greater. This is a statement of Rav Huna. It's the halach of Rav Huna. I'll read it again. So when you redeem them, first you redeem the trees. Bishav yan, at their market value. And then what you're going to do is you're going to redeem the land at its fixed rate. Now, amakasavar Rav Huna ana makdish ma'in yafa makdish. And so therefore, the presumption over here is that according to Rav Huna, when a person is being makdish, he's doing so with a generous eye. And that's why we're assuming that it was two transactions, trees separate from the ground, and so therefore the trees now are going to be redeemed at not a fixed value, but rather a market value, which is more revenue for the Beis HaMikdash. Eizvei Rav Nachman l'Rav Huna, so the Gemara is going to be challenging Rav Huna extensively. And these challenges are going to take us through the bottom of this Amud and to the top of the next Amud. We start off with the following. Echad HaMakdash b'cholos HaMachuz v'echad HaMakdash b'pardesa bastinos in Beis Zerach HaMasarim v'chamishim shekel kesef. So the first question comes from our Mishnah. And if you remember the Mishnah, it just was 10 lines earlier. So if you remember the Mishnah says it doesn't matter what kind of property you were Makdash, whether it was some property out in the outskirts or it was the orchards of Sebasti. The orchards of Sebasti, they probably have trees on them, right? And meanwhile, the Mishnah says, how are they going to be redeemed? At fixed rate, not at market value. Rav Huna, what are you doing about that Mishnah? So Amar le Ru'i le Pardesus Kamina. So Rav Huna says, well, I know what the Mishnah meant. The Mishnah did not mean that the orchards of Sebasti actually had orchards on them. It means that they were Ra'i. They were fit to have orchards on them, meaning it was such prime property, such prime real estate, that if we were to plant an orchard over there, an orchard would grow and produce fantastic yield, quality yield. That's what the Mishnah means. But it doesn't mean that there were actually trees over there. Now, a bit of a dochek, a bit of a forced pshat in the Mishnah, but you could say it, and it defends Rav Huna. Eisvei Beis Zera, Ainli Ela Beis Zera. The Gemara now challenges based on the second Braisa. The Braisa says Beis Zera. Well, sorry. The Pasuk says Beis Zera, and in truth of the matter is the Pasuk doesn't use the word Beis, but in other words, you'll see when the Torah is describing this ancestral field, the Steachuz of the Torah says Zera. Now, Zera means seed. So, and generally it means grain, like wheat, like barley. In fact, I know that because it says in terms of the redemption, it's going to be 50 shkalim for a chomer of Sa'arim. So the Torah gives a description of a property that is producing a grain. Stay gefanim, stay kanim, stay ilanus minayin. What if it produces something else? What if it produces grapes or fruit or something other than grains? Tamalamer sada mikomakom. So the Torah says sada. So once again, what it sounds like over here is that the person was being makdish what? A field that's producing some sort of fruit. Now again, according to Rav Huna, that's not going to be redeemed at the fixed rate. That's going to be redeemed at market value. So Amar le achinami poda v'chozer poda. So Rav Huna says, okay. In other words, once again, this Braisa doesn't shake me at all. What the Braisa means is that when I'm going to be redeeming the property will be redeemed at the fixed rate, the land will be redeemed at the fixed rate, and then what I'm going to do is, separate from that, I'm also going to be redeeming the fruit and the trees, but they're going to be redeemed at market value. And the only point that the Braisa was making is that this idea of fixed rate does not limit it to a land producing grain, it also is going to be expanded to a land producing other fruit as well. Again, so Bryce doesn't bother me. Eisvei, this is now going to be our third challenge against Rav Huna. So let's say a person was makdish three trees and they were configured in a way in which 10 trees would be planted in a Beisa'ah. So you remember we learned this back in Baba Basra in terms of real estate, in terms of buying and selling property, the question of whether or not when I'm buying a certain number of trees within a certain confined area, do the property necessarily go together with the trees? Do we make that assumption? So we learned basically that if a certain number of trees are planted within a configuration of a certain amount of land, so then we assume that land and trees go together. So within this configuration, I'm not going to go through the configuration right now. If let's say I have three trees planted in such configuration, so I raise the hikdash at the karka v'silana shebeneihem. So that means to say that when I makdish the trees, because they are planted in this configuration, that means that together with the trees comes the property underneath it. And also, if there are any little trees, any little bushes in between them, they're also going to go along for the ride as well. So in other words, a hikdash of the trees, when planted in proper configuration, are going to include property underneath. And when you redeem them, so you're going to be redeeming them at a fixed value because you're redeeming the property of Steachuza. Now, the price is going to go on, but you already see the question. Meaning it sounds like over here that you're redeeming everything at fixed value and the trees are not going to be redeemed separately. This obviously presents a problem to Rav Huna, but let's put a bookmark right here, put a little note over here. The b'raisa is still going to go on. Pachas mikana yosar alkein, o sheikdishim b'zeach r'zeh, ha'rizeh lo hikdish lo sakarka v'lo sigalana shemeneihem. If let's say the configuration did not match out, the trees were too close together or too far away from one another in any event, so then the trees are mukdash, but not the land. Or let's say I was makdish the trees, not three at a time, but only one at a time, same thing. The land does not necessarily come along for the ride. And so therefore, v'lo od, the b'raisa says, I'll go even one step further. El afilu hikdish ilan asav v'achakach hikdish karka, k'shupo de podes ilanus b'shavim, v'chozer po de karka be'zerach omer sorim v'chamishim shekel kesef. If let's say the trees were planted properly in configuration, and I was makdish the trees, followed then by being makdish the land. And so that clearly means that I was not interested in being makdish the land together with the trees. So under any of these circumstances that we just described, the trees are going to be redeemed at market value because the trees are separate from the land. The trees are going to be redeemed at market value while the land is going to be redeemed at fixed rate of chamishim shekel kesef.
That okay. Configuration, Rabbi, does that mean it's an orchard?
Yeah.
So,
yes.
So even if you miss Rav Huna's thing about the orchard.
Yeah, I understand that. But right now, the Gemara is just focusing on Rav Huna's point of how we always are going to separate the trees from the land in terms of redemption, because that's going to generate the most revenue for the Beis HaMikdash, and this Braisa does not seem to suggest that. The beginning of the Braisa clearly says that's not the case. The Braisa says that if the trees are planted within a configuration, so and I was marked just at least three trees at one time, so then that is going to include trees and land, and the Braisa then goes on to say, when redeeming, you redeem at fixed rate, and that goes against Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, and maybe you want to tell me, well, maybe the Pshat in the first part of the Mishnah is, I redeem, and I redeem again. Meaning, there are two redemptions, one for the land, one for the trees. Land at fixed rate, trees at market value. The Gemara says that's simply an unacceptable Pshat in the Braisa. Because the second half of the Braisa talks about multiple redemptions, staged redemptions. So that's the first part of the Braisa is contrasting the second part of the Braisa. So it can't be that the first part of the Braisa is talking about stages. Elahamani, so the Gemara says, okay, so basically we're stuck. Meaning we have a Braisa and it's clearly not going like Rav Huna. So the Gemara says basically we're going to try to defend Rav Huna, and we'll do so in the following manner. Maybe we'll say like this. Look, Rav Huna's position is predicated on the fact that when a person is makdish, he does so ba'ayin yafeh. And so the greatest amount of money generated to the Beis HaMikdash is going to be what he had in mind. And that's why we presume that when it was a field with trees on it, they were separate transactions. And that's why the field is going to be redeemed at fixed value and the trees at a market value. If let's say I fundamentally disagreed with Rav Huna, and in a moment we're going to see the Artanayim do. I fundamentally disagree with Rav Huna. And when a person is makdish, he does so ba'ayin ra'ah, with a stingy eye. So that means that he's not thinking about what's going to produce the greatest revenue for the Beis HaMikdash, but just the opposite. Yes, I do want to make a donation, but conservatively. Like, I'm not generous. So if we say that a standard person goes in that direction, so then we can suggest that the Braisa subscribes to that viewpoint, and that's why this Braisa that we just quoted is not going to separate the land and the trees. Elahamani Rabbi Shimon Hidam Ramakdish Bayin Ramakdish Ditanya. So the Gemara says, and we do have such a Tana. The Tana is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that when a person is Makdish, he does so with Ayin Ra'ah. How do I know that? The Gemara quotes a Braisa. When a person consecrates a field, he consecrates every aspect of the field. Rabbi Shimon Omer Lo Hikdish Ela Chrova Morkavis Dana Shikma. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, not everything in the field. Certain trees, yes. Trees that are not producing any fruit, yes. The Chrova Morkav and the Stana Shikma, right? The sycamore tree. But then not everything in the field, unless he articulates otherwise. But we're going to assume that the person was extraordinarily conservative in terms of the amount that he actually gave over to the Beis HaMikdash. Because Rabbi Shimon takes the general viewpoint that a person is Makdish Be'ayin Ra'ah. So fine, that is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Now if we take that and we assume that the two Braises ago subscribe to Rabbi Shimon, so then we could just simply say, you're right. The Braisa does not agree with Rav Huna, but the Braisa fundamentally disagrees in terms of how a person is Makdish. Rav Huna says Be'ayin Yafeh, and by the way, Rav Huna is an Amora. So what the Gemara must mean is that and other Tanaim agree with that position. And by the way, the Tanakhama of the Braisa we just learned agrees with that position. And on the other hand, the Braisa that went against Rav Huna, so that's going like Rabbi Shimon, that a person's Makdish Ba'ayin Ra. So E Rabbi Shimon, Ema Sefer, the Gemara says, okay. So you tell me that this most recent Braisa is not most recent. Two Braises ago is going like Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, well, if in the Braisa, what do we see? V'lo od ala afilu hiktish ilanos avachar ki hiktish karka, kishu poda posa ilanos b'shavim v'chozer poda b'zerach ha-misa'arim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Well, in the Braisa, we talked about a case where a person was makdishit in stages. First, he was makdish the trees, and afterwards, he was makdish the karka. And so when you redeem the trees by its market value, and the karka based on its fixed value. E Rabbi Shimon laser basal pigeon velifriku agavarayu dashamin le Rabbi Shimon does a basal pigeon. So the Gemara says, well, there's another position within Rabbi Shimon, which the Gemara says, if we subscribe to it, it's not going to work. And that is the following: we're going to think for just a little bit that according to Rabbi Shimon, in terms of how we assess redemption, it's going to be all based on the time of redemption. Meaning we are not interested, and this is the Gemara's thought process, we are not interested in the history of how it became Hekdesh. When all is said and done right now, what am I looking to redeem? A land with trees on it. I, the person, was first makdish the trees and then he was makdish the land. We think right now that according to Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't matter. Right now he's being poda, a land with trees on it. And so therefore, how should it be redeemed? At fixed rate. Because basically what we're looking at is a property. Either trees on it, okay, good. Wonderful, good. That's how properties work. Aye, but he was makdish the trees before he was makdish the actual ground itself. Again, right now we're thinking that according to Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't matter. Everything is going to be related to the time of pigeon. Why do we think that within Rabbi Shimon? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why we think that because of the following braisa. Shamin le Rabbi Shimon does about the pigeon to tell you the Gemara quotes the braisa. Minan lokech sadeh me'aviv v'ikdisham. Let's say a person purchased a field from his father. Okay, strange case, but. In other words, he purchased a field from his father, so at the time of purchase, the field now for him is a stay mikna. However, at the same time, we understand that the way nature works, eventually the land is going to become a stay achuza. And so basically what we're going to be looking at and trying to wrap our heads around is at what point, if any, does this land turn into a stay achuza? So, lokef sadeh me'aviv, so he purchased the land from his father, v'hikdisha, and he consecrated v'achar kach me'saviv. So the sequence of events is, bought the land from his father, makdish the land as a purchase field, as a lease field, and then afterwards his father dies. Minan shetei lefanav kestei achuza. So according to the Tanakama, we're calling this a stei achuza, even though when he was makdish it, his father is not yet dead. So tamalama im es stei miknaso asher lo mistei achuza sof. If it is a purchase field and not an inherited field. It's a funny pasuk. A purchase field, not an inherited field. Well, of course. If it's purchased, it's not inherited. So, stadeh sheinu ruyah lo stadeh stei achuza. Yatzazu sheinu ruyah lo stei achuza. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. So, according to the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, if I have a land, even though when I first got it, I got it as a purchase field. But as long as there is potential for it to become a stei achuza, so then categorically it is viewed as a stei achuza, even though I was makdish it as a stei mikna. That is the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they darshan from the Pasuk. Rabbi Meir, now hold that thought for just a moment, because in other words, what you want to highlight there is, that is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. We're going to focus on Rabbi Shimon. But in the meantime, let's just finish the brisa. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir is going to disagree. Minan lokech steme aviva mesa viva acharka chidisha minan shetei lefanav kistei achuza. According to Rabbi Meir, the only scenario in which the land is going to be ancestral land is under the following circumstances. You buy the property from your father. The father is nifter. Now the lease property turns into an ancestral property, and then you are makdish it. Only under those circumstances the land qualifies as stei achuza. How do I know that? Tamil Lomar, as we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis. Tamil Lomar, im es stei miknaso asher lo mistei achuza so. Sada she'enu stei achuza, yasezu she'i stei achuza. So what the Torah is doing is under these circumstances, it is considered stei achuza. Because when you were makdish it, it was at that point already a stei achuza. But if you were makdish it while it was a stei mikna, Rabbi Meir is going to disagree with the previous two Tanayim. He's going to disagree with the opinions of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda. And he's going to say that in the previous case, that would be considered being Makdash Estei Mikna Na Estei Achuza. Okay.
Are there siblings involved?
Let's right now, just let's just stay focused on task right now. There's a lot going on. Tamalami Mistei Simon Kisar Shalom Estei Achuza. So Estei Sada Shein or Sada Achuza. Yatsu Shize Estei Achuza. Now, Ila Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon, Afilu Likdisha V'Acharkach Meis Av Estei Achuza Havya. So the Gemara now just makes the observation, meaning I know we already made this point, but the Gemara now is making the observation. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, so in the event that it were makdish it while it was a stay mikne, because the dad subsequently died after your makdish it, it now turns into a stay achuza. Now the question is why? Now it's funny that it's a funny question. I say it's a funny question because they had a drusha, they darshaned a pasuk. But what the Gemara is going to think for a moment is that maybe it's not really the pasuk. Maybe it's based on a svara. What's the svara? Shas pidyon. Meaning that when appraising and assessing a field in terms of redemption, you look at the time of the redemption and you don't look at any history. At the time of redemption, dad's no longer alive. So at the time of redemption, the reason why you're going to be treating it like an ancestral field is because that's what it currently is at the time of redemption. That's what the Gemara is going to think. And the Gemara is going to say it. My time, imisham kra lecha Rabbi Meir Hudasa. So if it's based on the pasuk, which I know the Gemara quoted the pasuk, but if it's true, maybe the pasuk is coming to teach me what Rabbi Meir taught me. Allah misham dasa baser pidyon. So it must be that we're following pidyon. And so now I know it's intricate. I know the Gemara is intricate, but the basic point of the Gemara is as follows: we have now just at least proposed that according to Rabbi Shimon, when assessing pidyon, we do so based on shas pidyon. The time that's being redeemed. And I do not pay any attention to the history. And I just simply look at the Shas Pidyon. If this is in fact correct, in a moment the Gemara is going to say it's not. But if this is in fact correct, now we're going to go back to the Brisa. Now remember the previous Brisa? What happened? I was makdish the trees and then I was makdish the field. And now I come to redeem it. And what did the Brisa teach me? For the trees, market value. For the land, fixed rate. And if we're now suggesting that according to Rabbi Shimon, we're following Shas Pidyon, that is wrong. Meaning, then what we're going to say is as follows. At Shas Pidyon, what am I looking at right now? A land with trees. Yeah, the person first was makdish to the trees and then he was makdish to the land. It doesn't matter. If I subscribe only to Shas Pidyon, what am I looking to redeem right now? A land with trees. And so therefore, its redemption should be strictly fixed rate and not separating the trees from the land. This is all the question that's built into the Gemara right now. But the answer of the Gemara, Amar of Nachmar Yitzchak, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Karash, Kacham, V'darosh. So the answer of the Gemara is, you're wrong. Your assumption is wrong. You think it's based on a Svara? It's not based on a Svara. It's based on a Pasuk and how they darshan the Pasuk. Im kein lichtov rachmana, im es stei miknaso, asher lo achuzaso. My mi stei. So the Pasuk could have said, stei miknaso, asher lo achuzaso, which talks about its current status. It says mis day sadish en ruilios de achuzaso. By virtue of the fact that it says from the field, it means that we don't even have to look at its current status. We can look at its potential, meaning as if this land is potentially going to move over from being a leased field to ancestral field, i.e., a person bought it from his father and he was makdishit, even though he was makdishit in its leased state. Nevertheless, because potentially this land will be converting into ancestral field when his father dies. So therefore, in terms of redemption, it qualifies as an ancestral field, not as a leased field. And that's behind the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, not the Svara of Shas Pidyon. And so therefore, once we're saying that, so now we can go back to the Braisa, and we don't have to assume that the Braisa is necessarily following the Svara of Shas Pidyon. Okay. That part was tricky, admittedly. Okay, we're going to stop over here. I'm going to just quickly recap, and then tomorrow we'll pick it up from the two dots. We started the third parak this morning. The basic idea of the third parak is that when it comes to the Torah giving us a fixed rate of paying, so sometimes represents a kula, sometimes represents a chumra, because the market value may be higher or lower, and when the Torah says you're going to be paying a fixed rate, so therefore, in terms of how that affects you, it affects you depending on whether you're getting a break from what the market value is higher, or you're going to have to pay more than market value because market value may be lower. In any event, numerous examples that are given. So far, we've covered two this morning. We covered Erchin, where it's a fixed rate, and so sometimes a person can be valued more, sometimes less, but you're paying the fixed rate. And the redemption of Steyachuza. The redemption of Steyachuza is also at a fixed rate, and so therefore, sometimes that fixed rate can represent more or less than its market value. Most of our day today was dealt with a statement made by Rav Huna, where Rav Huna says that when a person is makdish a field and trees on it, so the person always had the best interest of Bedek HaBayis in mind, and so that means that the land is going to be redeemed at the fixed value, but the trees are going to be redeemed at market value. The assumption is that he was makdish it separately so that more money can be generated toward the base of Mikdash. The Gemara challenged Rav Huna from many different Mishnayos and Braisos. The Gemara so far has defended Rav Huna.